This is RSVNB Update, episode 644, recorded Thursday, November 2nd, 2017, Divination Disco. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update, the last update of October, technically, since this was an October production month. So this is Tycho's last episode. Welcome back, Tycho.
Thank you, Shane. As you said, this will be my last episode.
For a long, long time. No, I'm just kidding. You haven't done anything bad. You haven't done anything bad. But
oh, really?
But anyways, just to check in on your crimes and whatnot, we do have Siri on with us this week to talk about Halloween and another unfortunate change from Jagex Land. But welcome back, Siri.
My crimes? Well, have you
no,
been
Tycho's
peeking
into crimes.
My... Oh, Tycho's crimes.
The only one who knows about my crimes, my
then,
boss.
Then I said nothing. It's fine. please don't look too carefully.
You know I will meet you at next Runefest.
Oh, sure. No, that's not ominous if I've ever heard of anything then.
Well, it is Halloween.
That's true. And... I don't know if this is something we should be scared about, but that's a good way to start off with this week. We're not going to actually start off with the Halloween content in game. We're going to start off with another change to the Dimension of the Damned finale date. So as you guys might recall, this was initially supposed to take place last Saturday. Then it was forecast forward to this Saturday, November 4th, and now it has been pushed back another 2 weeks. To November 18th.
I think I can summarize this in one sentence. The Dimension of the Damned is damned.
To failure, perhaps.
To failure, yes.
Yeah.
And it's such a shame because when it was released, and if we don't think about the patches for the during the 24 hours after release... I think it was a success. I really enjoyed the content, and I saw a lot of other people also enjoy the content. But the finale, it's been a roller coaster with parts of the rail missing.
Yeah. Mod Salen posted the news post today about this, and the reasoning goes as follows. One of the biggest problems that arose for us here is that a PVM-focused tournament means a finale that needs to be much more finely tuned in terms of a fair and balanced environment. The problems came into notice when working on the culling system. Quote, as a balancing mechanic, it works nicely. We ran into a lot of problems to make this work within the game. Mainly using our current high score system has meant almost entirely rewriting how they work, due to the game needing to get information from Dimension of the Damned every minute, rather than only taking the data when you log off. Additionally, during development, we found... several ways that the system could be abused and are adamant to make sure that none of them make it through into the final game mode. So,
and I just high scores. Cannot understand how this happened. I have spent the entire day trying to think about how this came to be. But here it says, during development, we found out that the system could be abused. During development, that means that whenever they were working on it, they found out it was wrong. They didn't need to play it to actually play it, which means either they're still developing it, which would be a bad sign, or they sort of figured it out, thought they could fix it, and then just pushed it back, and now they're in a time problem. But, like, Dimension of the Damned is so time critical. Like, the most important thing about Dimension of the Damned is maybe not even the content, but the hype curve that comes with
right.
it.
And it needed to go off without a hitch.
It's 10 days of stuff. People race to the highest scores. That was supposed to be an exciting race. I don't know if it was. I haven't really followed it. I wasn't.
Oh, yes, it was. I can tell you that it was.
Like, I can see people trying to get in the top 1,000, like, maybe in the last day, last hour, etc. So, like, you get this excitement, and then you work towards this huge climax, the finale, where the top 1,000 players are going to face off and try to get to stay alive as long as possible. Like,
for real world prizes.
Yeah, a trip to Jagex.
Right? Super exciting.
That's the carrot in front of us.
And then they say, okay, we need another week. Nobody cares anymore after that first week. Like, I'm not in the top 1,000. I would have maybe been sort of interested if it was right after the race, if I had been following it. But time passes, and the finale is not happening. But okay, a week. We can maybe span a week. 3 weeks. That's almost a month. That just doesn't work anymore. Everybody has lost interest by now. And I think a lot of the players that played during the prequels, they're out of it. They're no longer really involved in the game. They can't really keep playing to keep involved. They're going to have to start cold, as a matter of speaking.
And
I just don't get how this happens. This is not the first thing that went slightly wrong as well. They had to change the balance during the first... What is
extensively. In the first 48 hours, they swung it too far one way, and then they had to swing it back to the middle again.
I think they lost at least half the players that were initially interested in those first 48 hours.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. Go ahead.
This is such a big thing. It's the first big event with real world prizes that happens in the RS3 world. Old School has been doing this for a while, successfully, I might say. But this is the first RuneScape 3 thing, and I was hoping it was the prequel to other things, because this is how you get players interested in the game. I mean, they even intended this to be the first impression of some people that have never played RuneScape before. That's why everybody starts at the same level. You cannot do things like this and think it's okay. Because you build up this hype, and then you can't have a broken stuff. You have to realize how big this is, and this had to go without big problems, and it has been riddled with problems.
Yeah,
and I don't get it. If I were in charge of this update, I would have made sure that everything worked perfectly before even making the announcement that something like this was going to happen.
Yeah, so. You know, one of the things they say also in the posting is that additionally, as one of the first fully fledged tournaments for RuneScape, we want this entire project to have the right amount of testing and QA time, something that we're not willing to skimp on in order to make sure your enjoyment of the mode is the best we can provide.
How in the world did they not notice the difference between a week and a month in the development time?
Right. And I would like to also point something out here, that when you start talking about a couple days, that's fine. I mean, ordinarily, you'd want it to end on a Friday and the finale be on a Sunday, because that way then you're in the same kind of mood that you've been in the entire time you've been practicing. So a couple days is okay. But you extend that out to a week and now 3 weeks, and you in effect lose all the immersion you had with the game world, because you're going to pick up little things and little activities you're going to do only in Dimension of the Damned that you're not going to do in RuneScape 3 or Old School. And you're going to pick those up as you're playing Dimension of the Damned. And if you're out of the game world for 3 weeks, you're going to lose a few of those things. You're going to lose that immersion. That could also play a role in depending on how well you do at this. So that's one issue with this. And another thing I'd like everyone to think about is that how long does it take to level up a brand new RuneScape 3 character to the point where it can start doing things and interacting with the majority of the game world? I think if you had members and you really played, you played for a couple hours each day, I think you could get a lot done in 3 weeks. And if you look at other games like World of Warcraft, Star Trek Online, you can level up characters from level 1 to max level in that amount of time. So 3 weeks in a gaming sense is an eternity.
Exactly. Whoever thought that it was a good idea to start posting this. I mean, so the balancing changes in the first 48 hours were done based on player feedback. And this is a bit of a theme we see with RuneScape updates, right? The update comes out, and usually it's not perfect, and then we see hot fixes based on player feedback. We'll see a bunch of patch notes next week based on player feedback. That's not a healthy system. But sure, we've come to live with it, right? In a way, if a new piece of content comes out, especially big ones, you wait a few days to play it. We've come to expect that. But you cannot do that with a competitive thing. You cannot change the balance drastically after it has started. Like, imagine a big, like, Dota tournament or an Overwatch tournament, and halfway through the big tournament, you start changing the balance of some of the characters. You can't do that.
People would
be utterly angry and outraged if a developer would do that. And yet that is what RuneScape did.
Yep.
And you cannot depend on player feedback for a competitive event with huge real world prices with a huge hype around it. You just cannot use that same pattern.
You got to go with your internal metrics, and those metrics need to be spot on. And if they're faulty, you're going to run into problems like this.
You need to QA this like into the detail. This needs so much testing. You need to be 100% sure that this is all fair, balanced to a point that people can live with it. It can't be perfect. It will never be perfect. I accept that. But it should be fair enough to a point that it's enjoyable and fair to everyone.
Yeah. And as a form of just one thing quickly, as a form of compensation for this, they added in for the top 10, you also get a year of standard RuneScape membership if you make the top 10.
And the top 50, they will receive a dimension of the Damned style pet that previously was only available for the top 10. So as a player, there's a couple of things I'm very disappointed with. The biggest one may be that I will have a month now when the finale starts with no training. Ask anyone who's doing any sport, any activity on Earth, and say to them, what if you would not do this for 1 month and then participate in a huge competition? I asked that to my neighbor, and he said that would be catastrophic. And I agree with him.
I mean, imagine this being done for like the Olympics, right? You have all the rounds. And like, okay, so the finale for like gymnastics will be in a month. Meanwhile, you're not allowed to do any gymnastics.
That's catastrophic.
I mean, it's an extreme example, but in a way, that's what they're doing at Jagex.
Yeah. And
just the service. And another thing also is when they first announced the finale, I was all excited. I stayed in the servers until they forced us to log out. As you said, Cillian, I was working with my high scores until the very end, and I was so hyped. And my plan then was, okay, now I should do it for the top 100, because why? It's fun, and I'm excited. I want to compete with others. But now I'm asking myself, why do I even care? And the only thing I imagine, okay, but I guess for the fun of it, and there are prizes, but I even have to put it on my calendar. That's how unimportant it is. I have to put it on my calendar to even remember it.
Yeah, and this led me to a rather unfortunate conclusion here. And I asked you guys about this in pre-show, and you said it wouldn't work. I said at this point, it seems as though the initial hype will have died down by this point. And with so many iterations to this, it's a wonder, should we even have this at the end of the 3-week period, if it should just be canceled in its entirety? And that was a question I posed to you guys. And I mean, it's something I would definitely consider. I don't think it is feasible to cancel the whole thing. And if it were canceled, they likely wouldn't be able to pull this off again, because it would just have this stigma from the first round. And I know people, numerous people, in fact, who were going to do Dimension of the Damned, but after the first balancing changes, they didn't because of that. So, you know, this is in effect shooting themselves in the foot, Jagex shooting themselves in the foot here for future competitive events in RS3, because what's to say that those won't go off without a hitch and have multiple balancing passes once they make it out to the live game. So,
I mean, I think this is a question that, I mean, we can ask it, we can probably not answer it, but it's worth considering
right.
What's next, right? Yeah. There's a couple of things that can happen. Jagex can decide to do another attempt at a competitive event. That competitive event could go two ways. It could go perfect, which I hope it does, or it could be as catastrophic as the current one. Either way, I think before you get to that point, it will be really hard to get people involved in that competitive event. And I think, no. So, fact. I'll get back to that. The second thing is that Jagex goes the expansion way and just stops doing them all together because the first thing didn't work out. That's not because the concept is flawed. I still think expansions, for example, are a good concept.
Yeah, it's just execution.
But execution just fails. And either way, I think that the only way to do the right thing, I think dropping this is a huge missed opportunity. Let's just agree to that. But they might do it and we'll see what happens then. But if they want to have a chance at doing this right in the future, there's only one way to get people involved again, and that's showing that they learn from their errors. That's showing that it won't be like this the next time. And that's incredibly difficult because you will always have this stain. You have to wash it off with a perfect event. Otherwise people won't play it anymore. And that is why I think that Jagex should come out and say, okay, this was a problem. This was what went wrong. This is what we're going to do next time to make sure it doesn't happen again. And if you do that, people might get at least enough trust to try the next event as well. Because I'm not sure if they would do Dimension of the Damned again next year, even if there was enough interest, would people do it? Or would people be afraid that we get another problematic event like this one? I'm not sure, and I think that is a question that Jagex has to answer for themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, they could look to the old school team for advice on how to pull this off successfully, because they have had Dead Man Mode and Dead Man tournaments at RuneFest.
I mean,
but those kind of got DDoSed as well. But I don't think that's in the same ballpark as this, is it?
Not really. I mean, you have no idea how hyped people were to go to that event at RuneFest. Like, people were utterly, utterly excited. To just
barely.
Like, it was ridiculous. It was maybe not the most popular talk or event, but people were the most hype about it, and that's how you do it right. And that is because the entire time scale was right. Imagine if a day before RuneFest they announced, oh sorry, we can't do the finale tomorrow, we'll do it in 2 weeks.
You do have a point there.
I can't even measure the disappointment if that would happen.
Yeah.
It's a shame because I personally think Dimension of the Damned is a success and the content is a success, and I would really love it to bring it up every Halloween, but the competitive part, I can't get another word on failure.
The execution of the competitive part was a failure, but we have to accept that the competitive part is an essential part of this piece of content. You cannot make this a permanent piece of content. It would be dead content within a week.
Right, because you have nothing to gain inside the world if you're just...
Exactly.
If you're just
so
there.
That's exactly. Why I suggest getting it up maybe once a year.
So, like, you have to make it a temporary event. But there has to be something at the end, a reward. It can't be just an in-game reward. You need the competitive aspect to make it work out. You need the race, the hype, the excitement. But that poet just fell flat on his behind.
Yeah,
so...
and one thing I also want to address quickly is that I personally am a person who learns from mistakes, and I will continue to accept that people will continue to make mistakes, but the biggest mistake one person can possibly do is not learning from previous mistakes. So I actually accept that Jagex did some patches after Dimension of the Damned was released, because okay, the player base had some opinions. Maybe Jagex had noticed something that they thought there was actually a point here. But I can't help but feeling that, actually fearing that actually Jagex might not learn from this mistake, because this is the second time they have moved the date just 2 days before the finals. And it was not once, but twice. So,
you know, you're entirely right. There is no other word to say this than failure. And that is not something I like to attribute easily to anything, because at its core, I am a belief that there is always a way to win and always a way to have something come out and be successful, whether it be this or something that you're personally working on. But at this point, with the amount of people that need to be engaged with this and the stigma it has going forward.
I mean, I think the conclusion to this, or the TLDR, if you want to call it that, is that the content team did okay. Like,
absolutely.
The content
they
itself
always
was
do.
Like, the content itself was good. The balancing could have been better, but that's as much the responsibility of the testing team as from the content team. So, I don't know, that's the only thing I would have as a complaint about that. I think the big problem is the management in this case. It's the person who said, we're going to do it now, instead of the person who should have said, all right, this is not done yet. This has to be right. Let's push it back a couple of weeks until we're sure we can pull it off.
Exactly.
And that's the person. I don't want to blame specific people, because that's never a good thing. But
and if you do that, then they don't learn from their mistakes.
I mean, but it's the content team that did the right thing here, and it's the management that's wrong. And I want to make sure that the content doesn't get under the snow, because if everything has gone smoothly, this would have been a great event.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes,
agree.
With lots of hype.
And I mean, I think you guys can attest that the actual play style and the play inside the event was just fine.
I have not tried it. Ow.
I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, it was sticks and stones. There was no magic, only melee and range, and a lot of abilities were missing. But it was the limitation against hordes of zombies that made it challenging. Okay, they had to increase the amount of zombies to make it really as challenging as it should have been. But after that, I was really enjoying myself a lot. And it, as we talked about in a previous episode, this wasn't something that even took a lot of developing time. We only have like 5 new NPCs designed.
Right.
And a couple of...
it's all just limitations on the client.
Yeah, limitations, and then... The graphical team dropped a lot of dead bodies everywhere to settle the mood. And that was fantastic. That's a prime example that things that are shiny doesn't necessarily need to be worked on for months.
Yeah, granted we don't have an insight into how things work there, but this definitely seemed like a low-cost update to pull off just because of reuse of assets and whatnot. And, you know, that says what you were saying, Sirion, that content came off fine. It was just execution QA management that kind of faltered. So,
in the end, I think that there will be a finale, but I think that the ones who are participating are not the people who had the hype when the servers closed, but the people who want a chance for the prizes. And that's a huge difference.
Very
between
true.
people who are there for hype. They want maybe be in the top 100, want to have a really good time, and then only having people who are there for the prizes that only care about themselves.
All right, Sirion, anything else on this before we move on?
No, let's leave this behind us. Let's get this finale done and let's look ahead at hopefully better competitive events in the future. I really hope that Jagex steps up to this because I think this is one of those key moments. I said this after the Manifold expansion. I said they should step up and say, we messed up.
And
This
they
is what we're going to
did.
do better. They didn't. This is another chance they can do that. And I
Yeah.
really hope they do it because this can't go on like this. There's only so often you can eat away of players' trust and goodwill before you have big, big problems.
The biggest mistake you can do is not learning from your previous mistakes.
All right, so that takes us into the Halloween update, and the Halloween update this year is Ghost Stories of Gilenor. This was a TAP project put together in the spare time, and it made its way into the Halloween event. So basically how this works is there's a new NPC outside of Death's house, and you go talk to this NPC. The NPC's name is Closure, and Closure will give you a book of ghost stories, and you receive these ghost stories by finding 10 ghosts throughout Gilenor. Five of them are free to play, and five of them are members only. And after you receive all 9 of them, rather, you'll get a final ghost story from Closure and the Ghost Rider title. So, before we get into what makes this event special, you guys happy that they move towards more of a traditional Halloween holiday style event with this?
Oh, yes.
I really liked it. There are two sides of the coin, but I will get into just a bit, but I'm happy.
And what's more with this is that five of the lore entries in this event, the stories, five of the stories are written by players. And those players were Cinderquill, Zauriel, Barry Manilow, Chaos Lupus, and Questcaping. Questcaping, of course, being from Clan Quest. So these also stand alongside ghost stories written by Mod Raven, Mohawk, Scorpio, Rolly, and Osborne. So kind of a mixed bag here. Everyone puts their ghost stories together and they make its way into the event. I think this is absolutely a great way of doing holiday events and lore requirements that don't change the game. So, because I mean, we saw this with Manifold people's ability to write a story and get it in the Golden Library, and now we're here having this for the Halloween event. So, what did you guys think of the event overall?
I mean, I really enjoyed the concept of it. I liked the character of Closure. I thought it was a genius addition to the game. I thought that was something that does not get in the way of any existing lore. It adds a new ten like a new thing in the game that also means something. It has the potential of returning with new interesting stuff to happen. So I thought the overall concept was really inspired. I think that's the right word to use here. And that is something I have been missing in the latest in holiday events for a long, long while, actually. They were always
Yes, that's the exact same
sort
thought I
of the
got.
same. Like every single time we get the Easter Bunny and problems, or it's like the Santa. It's like, but this was really inspired and new and fresh, and that was something I really enjoyed about it.
Yeah, and it felt like a traditional quest as well, in some ways.
Yeah, that was just what I was going to talk about. That it, I mean, I thought about long about what word I was looking for, and you know what I came up with? Self-service.
Okay.
Because when you talk to him, he says you have to find all these ghosts, and you have to look at your quest journal, and there are the clues to finding all the ghosts around Gelinor. And I didn't felt I was handheld all the time. It didn't say Edge,
right.
Really. It didn't say Diamondheim, everything. It was hints, and there wasn't any way where you can just see the solution directly. You had to figure it out with your knowledge from the game, and if you didn't, you could just ask any player as usual. But it was self-service, and that's something I, as an quester and an adventurer, love, figuring out yourself, finding your solution, and exploring. So I really loved it. I know there are people who didn't, just because the self-service gave them like lack of clues or nothing to go on. But
I mean,
me, I loved it.
I did enjoy the style of the quest, but it was far from perfect. Like, I don't want to say this was terrible, but like, there were things that I didn't like about the way they implemented it. So there's three things, basically. The first thing is that I have always seen the quest log as something that exists outside of the game world. It's mm-hmm. a reminder for the player about what your character has been doing. It's a bit of a... You could see this as like a diary that your character writes. It felt slightly immersion-breaking that you have to use your quest log to solve this quest. That felt like wrong. I would rather have had like a list in the game. I know it makes a tiny difference, but it just felt bringing things to the wrong layer.
That's a fair point. They could have you have to unlock the stories, and if you are clicking on one story in the ghostly book that are handed out, you can get the clue. So that's a good point.
So second point is that I thought that some of the things were not straightforward. So I get that you need to figure out the quest yourself. You need to figure out what to do. But sometimes things were really, really strange. I got stuck on the candle.
Okay, the candle.
On what?
On the candle.
Oh, the candle one. Okay, I solved it in seconds.
So, I can spoil, right? Warning,
sure.
Spoilers for the candle puzzle. Mm? So I got candles. I found the candles. I found out that I put the candles in the dying thing. And I made a candle of each color. And I put every color where it should be.
Same.
And it didn't take.
Yep.
And then and I tried switching them around. I tried putting everything on the opposite things. I just couldn't figure it out. And what did I have to do? I had to take two of the four candles and dye them again.
Yeah.
That was so non-obvious.
That's right.
That was... I'm not a puzzle maker expert, but I'm pretty sure there's a couple of principles in making puzzles that this is breaking. Because it was so... It felt so weird that you had to do that.
You get ice blue from combining blue and white.
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, I get it. Two of them had like these weird names already, and two of them didn't. That should maybe have been a clue, but I thought it was just, I don't know, it's Jagex, probably a translation error or whatever. It's just, that was not obvious. And a lot of these quests had it, right?
The Dungeoneering one was also annoying.
The Dungeoneering one?
What was it?
The Dungeoneering one. How do you... I mean, you can sort of figure it out, but there are steps you didn't know. There's literally one of the puzzles.
I had no idea. I had a bound ring in my ring slot.
No, me neither. I didn't bring it in. So, like,
oh.
How do you come up to look in your equipment slot?
Right.
And then there's the clockwork one, where literally two of the steps are smudged, and the only thing you can do is guess.
Yeah.
You have to guess.
Yes. That,
so, like, I can't blame people for this quest to look at a guide. I picked up a guide because I was stuck.
Same. Especially for the dungeoneering one.
I didn't even know Guide existed.
You might be a better quester than me, but this went beyond normal quest puzzles. This was really difficult to figure out with just the tools you were having. And that is my second problem with the quest. The third one is maybe a bit more subtle, and you may probably not have thought about this, but the candle puzzle was based on ancient magics.
Yes.
It was also a free-to-play quest.
Good point. Very good point.
So if you're free-to-play, you have no idea what those colors mean.
You have no idea what ancient magics are. And sure, as soon as you figure out the colors of the candle, it's not that difficult to figure it out. I mean, ice, fire, and the other two you can sort of guess. It's not impossible, but it felt a bit sloppy. So yeah, the entire thing, I liked the concept, but it was so non-obvious, some of the things you had to do. Like, the same with the Barrows one.
That's the one I was going to ask about. What did you guys think of that?
I mean, to me it was obvious you just had to stand still.
Especially when after the green text started appearing in your chat box. That means you're doing something right.
And that point, I'm like, why am I still standing here? Because that green text shows four times before you're done. After one time, you've solved the puzzle. Why am I stood there for 5 minutes doing nothing? That felt like, why are you using that mechanic for so long? So, I mean, I like the concept. I like the little quests. But to say it was perfect, no, it wasn't. It's not the best quest I ever played. So, you know, it has two sides, but I appreciated the effort a lot. I like the concept. I liked some of the puzzles and stories. The ghost in Edgefield, you have to bring food and then water and that kind of stuff. That brought me back to the old days of questing. The character. I need this item. You're like, ah, darn it! I've got that. Now I need this. Oh, I mean, it's some people might find it frustrating, but to be honest, there's a bank around the corner. There's a general store where you can get a bucket, you can fill it in the well.
And that's where RuneScape started.
And that was a nice nostalgia trip, and that was really fun. The wool puzzle was really fun to figure out as well. Again, that was not obvious that you could only remove 3 sheep. That never said so. That's also one of these trial and error things. But the puzzle itself was, I mean, I enjoyed that. So the sliding puzzle was a bit reused. We talked about the clockwork one. That's also really nostalgic, by the way. Finding a bunch of stuff, putting it together.
Yeah. So, as much as I enjoy the content and I passed, solved the puzzles and I enjoyed it, I didn't struggle as much as YouTube probably did, but there was one point that really surprised me. That would be the fourth point. Then you know that one of the ghosts are in both the rot,
right?
So you need a quest to enter both the rot, or have started in aid of the hierarchy. And therefore, it's locked behind the quest in search of the Mikey. What does this mean? That means that everyone who does not like quest or are a skiller, since in search of Mikey involves combat, can't access the lost ghost.
And this event's going away.
Yeah, and the event's going away because traditionally, the Halloween, the Easter, the Christmas event, everything should be accessible to all players. Am I right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. If that's the case, then that's probably the biggest difference in this Halloween update, not everyone can access it.
But you only need to complete 5 of them to get the Ghost Story emote and the Headless Rider override. You need to complete 10 to get the Ghost Rider title.
Yes, but the point is, the players can't enjoy the whole content if you are a skiller or a person who hates quests.
I mean, to be honest, if you hate quests, you would probably hate this event.
True. So, and if you're limiting yourself to be a skiller, that's something that you know about coming in, just like when people used to make peers in the olden days.
That should be optional.
It is a fair point. I mean, I was thinking this about Priest in Peril, but then I realized that it's no longer required to enter Mauritania. But yeah, Book the Rob is actually limited. Is it? Can you not access Book the Rob before you did the quest?
Yeah, I actually were standing by the gate to...
Because you can access that entire swamp.
And there were players who tried to enter through the gate, and I had to tell them what quest they had to do and the steps involving to enter the city. And there were several of them that rage quitted and just teleported away.
Mm.
And this was what I saw in game now. And there are probably many other people that I didn't saw that had the same reactions. Why can't I enter the area where this Halloween event is supposed to be? And I'm even more surprised how did they know it if they hadn't figured out the hints on their own. But with you two telling me that you used guides, well, I now know how they knew.
Well, I mean, when I sign up for this, it should be self-obvious what's going on. I shouldn't need to bang my head against the wall to do this, and it shouldn't take me randomly clicking on my worn items interface to see that I have a ring of kinship equipped that I didn't bring in with me.
Yeah, it was actually just by pure coincidence that I have my equipment slot in a separate window than my inventory.
There is a message when you use the spinning wheel that your ring end up bloodied. So there's a hint, but it's very non-obvious. So
yeah, all right. So overall, I think then that we like the sentiment that we got from this. We like the way this turned out. We like the fact it's a traditional event. There were just a couple of little awkward RuneScape questy things along the way then.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed it still.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
that's
also
a master questscape for you.
True. Very true.
I have the master questscape, so it's not like I'm not experienced with this kind of stuff.
Before we go on to the next part about this, the polling, we'll just say that if you're wondering which story that was written by our own questscaping, that was Family Reunion. So if you want to read that, you can read it in your book in game or on the transcript on the RuneScape wiki that they nicely provide about all of these lore books in game. That's a really nice service that they provide. So
can we just list all the 10 stories?
Yeah, let's do that. So moving through the stories here, we obviously have Family Reunion, which is by Questscaping. We have Heralds of the Apocalypse, which I'm guessing you think is modded by Mod Raven.
Yeah, I think that was by Mod Raven.
Okay. The Group Gatestone, which of course relates to Dungeoneering, which, oh boy. Always and Forever. By the Light of the Moon. Mod Mohawk, perhaps. Family Reunion, as we mentioned, by Questscaping. Wool by Mod Scorpio, of course, relating to the sheep story. Asleep, Clockwork. Clockwork, of course, is the one where we had parts that were missing, and that was in Burg de Rot. And Sarah Doman, Have Mercy by Zoriel. And then The Beginning and the End, which is the final one that you unlock after completing 9 of the ghost stories. And that is assumed to be by Mod Osborne, so... Very good. And this is only going to be in-game for a limited amount of time. And you might be wondering, boy, how do we know that? Well, that's because right now there's a poll going on in-game where we are being asked is, should this year's temporary Halloween event, Ghost Stories of Gielinor, become a permanent member's quest? And last I checked, I believe 62% of the people who are voting here wanted this to become a permanent event. Unfortunately, the yes vote requires 75% to pass. So yes, given the amount of time left on this, it is unlikely to see this becoming a permanent quest in RuneScape. What did you guys vote?
So I had a lot of thoughts about this. I read the forum post about making this into a permanent content, and basically what they said, that don't vote yes if you think it's whatever. It's not about getting something and not getting something. This poll is about is this such a high quality update or interesting or in any ways contributing so much to the game so it should stay. And that made it really hard for me, because was this Halloween event enough to remain in game? I had a lot of thoughts about that, and in the end I said yes, just because of what Cillian said, that what was his name again?
Closure,
exactly. He brings so much possibility into the lore, and I personally loved the ghost stories that I read. So I think that should stay in the game, but I knew at that point that they had to fine-tune a couple of things, but I saw the possibility in that there. Yeah, so I voted yes.
All right. I voted yes as well, and the main reason I voted yes is because I believe that if you insert lore into the game that is, you know, canonical lore, it should not be removed from the game. And this isn't, you know, Romeo and Juliet, where it was an outright copy of something that existed in the real world. This is actual RuneScape lore, so it just makes sense to keep it in the game. But what they say here also is that there is a precedent for having this kind of permanent content that was a Halloween event be in game in the past in regards to Swept Away and Broken Home. But the difference is that those were initially designed from the very beginning to be permanent game content. And this was not the original idea for Ghost Stories of Ghilanor. Though with that being said, it would be relatively easy to convert it into permanent content. Now, Sirion, what did you vote before we go into a bit about what would happen with the rewards and changes to it?
I mean, I have to admit, I voted yes before even playing it, because I mean, quest caving is a clanny. It's content in the game. Let's make that permanent, shall we not? I was meh about this from the start, so I just voted yes for that. I mean, on a second, like, now that I have played it, it's like I said, it adds like a little thing to the game. So I think it's great. I don't think it needs to have big rewards or anything like that. Like, have a small lamp as a reward for each of the subquests should be fine. It's about just the tiny touches it adds to the game.
Yeah. And, you know, they would have to do other changes to it to make it permanent content. In regards to its structure, they estimate this would take between 2 and 3 weeks after the close of the poll, and it would remain in game as is until it was made permanent content. If you complete it as an event and it ends up becoming a quest, you'll be considered to have completed the quest. The changes would include reward changes. And these reward changes would basically be, you have the reward as it is now as a holiday event, but if it was completed as a quest, you would get up to 1250 prayer XP, 10 ghosts, so 10 times the Restless Ghost Award, 50 ancient bones, the Ghost Rider title, 1 quest point, and of course the 2 treasure hunter keys if you were completing it as a quest. Requirements, they would want it to sit more clearly in established canon, so to that end they would likely add Restless Ghost as a quest requirement, use of a ghost speak amulet for talking to the ghost, and yes, an aid of the Myrek solely for access to Burg de Rot. And yes, while you can enter Burg de Rot early in that quest, we would lock it behind completion of that quest for design reasons. So you need to start in 8 of the Myrec in order to access Burg Darrah. You were right on that.
Yes.
Did you doubt Tycho for a second?
Well, I mean, I just assumed that they might have added the option to enter Burg Darrah for this as a holiday event, but looks like I was wrong.
They're too busy balancing the dimension of the ground. They can't do this kind of stuff.
Oh, boy.
Well, they might have noticed then that in 8 of the Marquee includes have completed a restless ghost. Should maybe have noticed that. But maybe they wrote it twice in a way to for the readers to have a clarification.
They would also make certain structural changes, such as hiding certain elements. The ghosts in Burg Darrah are interactive elements in Burg Darrah, while the quest is not in progress, as to not create confusion in other pieces of nearby content. Lore-wise, they would take a bit of time to better establish the character of Closure within the game's wider canon, though this would be for our benefit for his potential use in future content, and would be unlikely to affect this quest content in any way. Finally, it's worth noting that any resource required to turn Ghost Stories of Gilenor into permanent content would have to be taken from another update.
Yeah, I was thinking about that before voting, but I decided, you know, I shouldn't be concerned about that, because even if it takes more time, it's still something that will happen. So yes, you're delaying something to get something you want into the game. I mean, that's a fair trade.
Yeah. The poll was published on the 31st, and as with all previous polls going forward, they did include the polling question here, and it wasn't changed like last time. And since I last looked in-game, we're up to now 64% yes, 36% no. But that's still not enough. So.
Yep, not enough.
All right, so that takes us into the second part of this week's update, and that is the revamped polling system that they put into game. The ability to have multiple questions on a single poll. And oh boy, do we have a lot of them this week.
Wow, wow.
It's more like a survey, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a survey. Yes.
It is.
I don't get the point of it.
Yeah, these are for ninja fixes. These are all quality of life changes. And
so, yeah, no, go for it.
Ninja fixes are something, in my opinion, that players should not be voting on, because they can submit ninja fixes. And I do think that the ninja team needs more of a guideline today as to what kind of ninja fixes get put into game, because we've seen ninja fixes get put into game that make zero sense whatsoever, like last week's fairy ring fix. That would have been a perfect quest reward, like you guys said. So I think there needs to be more oversight into what goes in the game. I don't get why we're voting on these. It makes no sense. So
you know why this makes no sense? If you ask a player, do you want a new thing in the game, they will vote yes. Right? Maybe some people say no, but most people will vote yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Look at all of them. The only one that is not a majority yes, at least at the time I filled it in, I haven't checked right now, but I'm pretty sure they're all yes except for the second one.
The ability
that says this will be a lot of work. If we do this, there will be no other ninja fix. Like, there will be less ninja fixes. So people voted no for that because they want many ninja fixes. And that's why they voted yes on all the other ones. What's the point in this quest? What's the point of this poll? It only shows that people want ninja fixes, which is something we already knew. So what are they going to do with this poll result? Because everybody wants everything. Yeah. That's what it says.
And the Omni Grigri, for example, build Monkey Madness 2 and make that a reward.
Yeah, I mean, I want it because
me too.
Grigri's annoying.
Monkey Madness 2 actually exists in old school.
I know,
but like all of these, you know, I think what they should have done is put these against each other.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
A player. Do you want this or do you want this? You can only pick one. Or they should have said, pick the 5 updates from this list that you want.
Or better yet, rate them in priority.
That would be probably even the best thing, yes. Or, I mean, they could even have, like, a smart thing where, for example, a large update counts as two and you can only, like, the top five of the priority order are, like, roughly what they can do. Something like that. Like, make people sort of be aware of that doing one thing means not doing another thing. Well, right now, it's Togglescape in the poll system.
Yes, because they said they are putting it out to prioritize. And in my dictionary, prioritize is I will do this first and I will do this last. That means I will get everything if I wait enough.
The point is, how are they going to figure out what people want most? Because I think the majority of people have clicked everything.
Yeah, the majority is yes on everything except the second.
Well, a lot of people probably want one thing more than other things. I want some things I voted yes on more than other things I voted yes on. But I can't make that distinguishment.
Yep.
Can't distinguish those. So, like, the whole thing feels a bit like, the only thing they can do is look at the percentages that voted yes. But is that really an accurate measure?
Well, that's why they have the 75% yes threshold.
Most of them get that, though, don't they?
Yeah, most of them do.
What, they did?
Yeah, there's a few that didn't. Let me just pull them up here quickly, and I'll get that for you.
Should we add a message that notifies you when you would have gotten a duplicate skill or boss pet? Has 67%.
Yeah. Omnigrigri, 88%. Let me just pull these all up here. And
96% for the permanent grappling hook.
And yeah, once again,
that's the difference. That's the huge difference between those who vote yes because they really want it, passing through that threshold. I mean, 96%. That's very obvious.
That's almost everyone wants that.
Yeah. Grigri, 88% yes. Ability book, 61% no, definitely not happening. Familiarization reset, 79% yes. Message that notifies you when you got a duplicate skill or boss pet, 67% yes, not happening. 88% chronicle absorption Saren prayer to collect manifested knowledge and divine carpet dust, 88% yes. 78% on the ability to cut any size granite sandstone directly into its smallest piece. Once again, quest reward.
Okay, that helps.
96% permanent grappling hook, 81% different inventory icon for rune crafting pouches.
The grappling hook could also be a quest reward.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it could.
90% on the carpet network to be able to do that. Oh, that would have been a great perk for the Menaphos rewards.
Wow, you're mind blown.
91.
I mean, we have to be honest here. These ninja fixes are things they want to put in the game. That doesn't mean they won't be gated behind something. They might say you need tier 5 Menaphos to be able to do this.
But is that a thing with ninja fixes to do that? Has that ever happened to a ninja fix? I'm struggling to recount that ever happening.
I might be tad optimistic.
You might be. 91% had the ability to empty gem and coal bags and other items into the bank deposit interface. So that's the same way rune crafting pouches work. 79%, should we recolor all divination wisps and spring to match their energy icon? I agree. I definitely voted no on this one.
No. That passed?
No.
Yeah, it passed.
Oh, bollocks. That's going to look gross. That's going to look like a disco.
You're right, it will, even the way they swirl.
No, but like, what, the point is, divination wisps have this very characteristic appearance. If you recolor them, oh gosh.
Yeah, I actually agree, because if it was something that was in one and the same area, I would understand the necessity to color them so you can distinguish them, but the spots are so far away from each other that you can't make any mistake.
I mean, they already did it, right? As the higher level, the more like elaborate and big the things are. Well, the pill widths are like tiny things. So, like, right. I noticed
that. I thought that was enough.
Yeah.
Yes, and you could examine them.
But instead, we get Divination Disco.
that passed by 4%. 92% display the maximum number of buy limit on Grand Exchange Interface. Here's one that didn't pass. Add Slayer Strikeworm contract to Slayer Masters. That didn't pass. That got 72%.
I voted no because I really do. I voted no on all the PVM ones.
Same.
But that's strange because it should be a very good one for Iron Man that really needs to get the Slayer helms done.
But they're a very small percentage of population, so.
Who knows? Okay. I skipped that one because it didn't concern me.
Here's another one that that did not pass. Add an all area broadcast to all boss item drops. 68% yes.
Mm-hmm. I skipped that one because I didn't feel I had enough knowledge of that.
Yeah, I voted no on that one just because chat box spam. We already got enough of that.
Mm-hmm.
Cannon decay. Should we allow you to repair the cannon without picking up? 84% yes. 83% yes, repair reset the kingdom at midnight. 90% yes, add the left click ability for bonfires to choose it to be cook at or add log to.
I voted no because we have enough toggles as is.
That's right.
Stop with the toggles.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
So and plus, I also see that as a perk of the Prif bonfire.
Isn't the point about for game designers to make the game sort of good without ridiculous customization?
I agree.
I mean, customization is what brings the game closer to the players. But at some point, you need to realize that the game has its own way of having things. That's what makes it challenging. That's the identity of RuneScape. I mean, having everything delivered on a silver platter, even you don't have even to right-click anymore. Now, I don't want RuneScape to go EasyScape to that point that you don't have to right-click ever.
Yeah. And this is also why I use a Mac and an iOS device, is because customization is more limited on those platforms than Android. I like that.
Okay.
87% yes, display an item's guide price. 87% yes as well, offer the ability to deposit your items when trying to enter areas with restricted items. So Entrena comes to mind.
I voted no on that.
Yeah, I voted no.
I voted no on that. Like, why? I understand quality of life updates, but also, this is too easy.
Yeah, this is too easy. This makes... I mean, it feels like... It feels like I will never receive a penalty for trying to go to Entrena, for example, with having everything. Okay, there's already a deposit box just beside it, but...
Good old days where you had to run to drain a bank.
Exactly. You were prepared for it and you had to solve the problem when you got there. And if you really wanted to know what was ahead of you, you had a guide that was written by those who had already experienced it. But this removes even the need for guides or just solving the problem when you get there. You get it delivered. And for what? I mean, okay, enhance the player experience of the moment. But still, there needs to be a challenge. You're playing the game just because there is a challenge, because it isn't easy. And I see more and more that with Togglescape, we're slowly going from hardscape to easyscape.
Yeah, it's been going that way a long time, and these ninja fixes are pushing us more in that direction, and I still don't understand why we need to decide this. Surely there are people in Jagex who are good to decide this.
I mean, it should be solving problems that people are struggling with that makes no sense. But I consider it making sense if you are entering a restricted area and you need to deposit your items, that you need to do it yourself.
We have to realize that Ninja updates remove friction from the game, but if a game had no friction, there would be no game.
Very good.
It would be
point.
On ice. RuneScape on ice.
The whole game, like games,
and there's
in
an,
and there's are.
A, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Built around putting obstacles in the player's way. That's players don't realize this, but the obstacles that are put in your way make the game more enjoyable in the long term. Like, if everything was just easy and smooth, it would be a movie. There would be no challenge. So removing all that friction can deteriorate the user experience to a dangerous level.
And like Saiko said, if it's RuneScape on ice and if someone is on ice, that means they're dead.
Yeah, the point is, players should not be making this decision. You should go to a mock Timbo and be like, would it be okay if we automatically offer the ability to deposit your items when trying to enter areas with restricted items? And a mock Timbo might say, no, that would make that too easy and remove the enjoyment in the long term. It should be a game designer's decision,
yep.
Not a player's decision.
Absolutely.
Players don't know what they want. I speak from experience. Players always want the game to be easier. Always. And that's not the most fun experience.
Completely agree. And here's one who's going to make it easier as well. Should we allow you to recrystallize on the same target, tree, rock, or fishing spot within the last 5 seconds before it expires?
No.
I voted no for this one.
I voted yes, because I wanted to accept 5 seconds that, okay, if you, I understand if you need to recast it the very exact second because of physics, but at the same time, if you want to recast it within 5 seconds, I said, okay, fine, 5 seconds. So it should be, I mean, why not exactly? Why not accept those 5 seconds?
Because it changes the way that the Crystallize was initially designed to work. The idea behind Crystallize was that
it changes the experience. Rates.
Yeah, it changes
it's
the
that.
Experience.
It changes the experience.
Makes it so it's more laid back. Because the idea with Crystallize is that you would get no resources, but you would need to be paying attention to your spot, your rock, your tree, to ensure
yes.
that its little glowing aura on it is still active. And if that aura went off, your XP rate would go back down. And that was the negative aspect of Crystallize that made it fair and balanced.
Yeah, good point. And I still consider 5 seconds to be acceptable. 10 seconds, I would have voted no.
And
5 seconds.
I have a question about this. How are you going to know when there's 5 seconds left on this? Are you going to count in your head? Because I don't think there's not little countdown bars on all of the crystallized items, are there?
Didn't they add it to the buff bar?
Yes, they added a countdown timer above the crystallized, if I remember right. So if I see that it's just a sliver of time left in crystallized, I know, okay, I can recast it. Before, if this never comes out, it will continue to be, you see that there is a sliver of time left, and you stare at your screen and you wait until it entirely goes, and then you refresh it.
All right. Well, I would be, I mean, I know what the wider player base thinks of these ninja fixes, because we see the results in the poll, but I would love to see what you guys hear on the update side think of it. So if you guys have any thoughts about this, post them in the comments or get in touch with us. I don't know why. That feels kind of distressing to me, but perhaps that's just me.
So one thing, Shane, what about the poll update? I mean, we're talking about the questions.
Oh, yeah, right.
What do you think about the poll update itself?
You know, there's nothing really different about these ones, aside the fact it's a list of questions and you can't change your answer. That part is good, that you can't change the answer. Another thing I thought they were going to do with all of these, and it was going to be the same for all polls going forward, but I guess it's just a capability that they have. I thought all polls going forward were not going to display the results. I thought that was something that they said they were going to do. But from this, it appears that that is just an option they can enable if it is something that they don't want the results influencing other things on. So that's kind of unfortunate. Okay. But
yeah, I had some troubles loading the polls in the first place. It was not showing me a notification that there were polls to fill in. So
did it get better?
Nope. Well, I ended up being able to vote, but that was reloading the whole thing. But I never got a notification. So
you can still vote on the website.
I voted, so it's fine now. But like, I had to reload the whole poll system before it would actually show me anything.
Huh. For those who have sharp eyes, have noticed that a poll booth has been added to Pristina's Tower of Voices and one in Birth Hope. And if you have polls you can vote, there will be a click option. And if you already voted, you can't click on it.
That's good.
But the biggest thing would be the skip option, that people realize that, you know what, I don't have enough knowledge about these certain questions, so I don't have the right to decide something that affects more to other people than myself.
I think there's very few people on the internet that are that humble.
You're saying
I'm one of a kind?
Well, maybe not one of a kind, but you're definitely a minority.
I did skip a few of the ones I felt that they didn't matter to me on. So, but I mean, I've been around so long, I know how everything RuneScape related works, except for combat. So I feel like I should have a say in how the game gets designed.
Well, there are a lot of questions actually that I skipped because I felt it didn't affect me directly or in a negative way. That I said, you know what, I may be affected this once or twice, but this affects a lot of people more than me. So I'm going to skip it and I'm going to say, you know what, I will let you decide it. I won't let my vote decide something that maybe end up being bad for you.
Yeah, but unfortunately lots of people won't do that, Tycho. That's just you. That's just you being a nice and generous, caring person.
But we see people actually skipping questions. I saw one question actually having a 30% skip. That's showing that people are actually skipping questions.
Oh, that's a good point. That's too bad they removed that little feature, eh? Because when you initially logged into the new polling system, you could see the skip rates as well, but you can't see that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you can see the skip rate if you go to the website.
Yeah?
If you go to the website, you can see skip rates. 10... 15, 9, 27% skip the Chronicle absorption question. 27%.
That's more than I thought.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people that don't have access to Seren Prayer and that realize I have no idea what it does, I have never used it, and I don't consider myself worthy of polling in this particular question.
Yeah. 18% skipped the granite one, 2% on permanent grappling hook, 13% on inventory icon. And these are, of course, of total votes, not the amounts we quoted earlier. 5% on carpets, 9% on gem bags and coal bags, 12% on the recoloring of divination wisps, 5% on the max buy limits, 21% skipped the Strikeworm Slayer contract question.
Nobody even cares about
21% also skipped the area broadcast for all boss item drops, 13% for the cannon decay, 27% skipped the Kingdom of Miscellanea reset at midnight question.
Yes.
Those people need to start doing MISC again. Because it's great money.
Yeah, it is.
9% Bonfire, 9% Grand Exchange results for prices, 7% deposit area items, and 19% skipped the crystallized question.
So, Shane.
Yeah.
So, just reading through them all, we can agree that the skip rate is between 10 and 20%.
Well, some are even high as 28, 27%.
Yeah, even higher and some even lower than 10. But thing is, those are very important votes if there wouldn't have been a skip option. That would actually, that could have made that a lot of question would have passed the 75% or even voted no, so that it wouldn't have passed.
I agree. So it's good to have skip. Yeah, it's good to have skip, and it's good to not be able to change your mind.
Yeah, and that's also something that you see in terms of politicians, that before a huge election, they go to the places where people don't know who to vote on. Because that's in that minority where the real...
They're campaigning the undecideds.
Yeah, campaigning the undecideds. That's where the real value lies. Not by the ones who know what they are going to vote on, the one who already decided before before you can vote, but the ones who doesn't know.
And so are you suggesting that Jagex should provide more information to make people skip less?
No. I'm just saying that it's a very good thing in letting people skip, because this is their votes are something that could tilt the balance, and just because they wouldn't be allowed to skip an option, they had to choose.
All right.
You see my point?
Yeah, I do. Okie dokie. On to the patch notes we go. Not too many this week. Very small. Dimension of the Damned login screen is now available for everyone to use if you want to set that to your background. The Bonfire Skybox has been removed from the Skybox and Filter menus, but the Paterdomus and Menaphos Skyboxes have been added to the Skybox and Filter menus. And the Halloween 17 filter has been added as well to that menu. So some new filters to play around with and the absence of the Bonfire filter. Also, logging into the Wilderness Agility course in a free-to-play world will now remove you from the area, of course, because agility is a member's skill, but the rest of the surrounding wilderness area is now free-to-play. And a tiny section of the fence east of Varrock, lone survivor of the Great Purge, is no more.
No.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, little piece of fence.
Oh, it was such a good memory.
I love those little patch notes like that. But all right, before we move on to our question of the week, just a bit of a link to go back to what we talked about last week in terms of the mining and smithing rework and the design documents that are at play. So Mod Jack has put together a forum post and his collection of Google Docs where you can access all of the current mining and smithing design documents. Mining basic mechanics as well as XP and ore rates gives you the full anticipated time to achieve level 99 in terms of gameplay. Also for smithing, basic mechanics, masterwork smithing, which is for building complex and expensive tier 90 gear, also energized armor and weapons, which are going to be made by combining masterwork armor with rare PVM drops. These are tier 92. So this is something we've been talking about a long time and something we've wanted for the smithing rework. And finally, the mastery system, look at potentially creating a more efficient post-99 smithing gameplay environment. So these are all Google Docs here that you can read through and post your feedback to Mod Jack on Twitter or on the forums. His Twitter handle is at JagXJack, and it says it at the top of each document here that you can click them and away you go. So I'm really
pleased. I like the masterwork items design. It looks really good.
It's really good, as well as that tier 92 armor and weapons being able to be made with energized items. So,
is that untradeable?
That's a good question. I'm not entirely sure.
I really hope they. I really hope they add untradeable stuff.
Yeah,
that is basically my biggest ask.
I don't know if there can be a very good balance between the PVM community.
It is,
yeah, because armor is tradable.
But there's an interesting point here, is that it says that the masterwork items are designed to be complicated, time-consuming, and expensive to make. This is intentional.
Bars are tradable. Folded bars are not tradable.
Right. So the end items are tradable, but the stuff in between is not. And of course, that's to provide value to the mining skill.
I don't know. I would have liked the masterwork items to not be tradable.
I agree.
I will accept it if it takes around five hours of in-game time to make it. Then I will accept it.
Yeah, and you know, they say this is designed to make them profitable to make. And an example here,
I mean, there should be some tradable new things, but there should also be untradable new things, because I think we want to make people interact with the skill and not just have PVMers buy things off the Grand Exchange.
Yeah,
wasn't one of the top options to have something like overlords from mining and smithing? Didn't they say that on RuneFest?
Yeah,
I don't see that in the current design documents.
That's a very good point.
Like, none of the overloads in RuneScape, any of the variants, are not tradable. So
we need to spend some time and go through these documents and do a specialized segment on these, because if you look through the masterwork items, it'll say total time for sword, including materials, is 5,057 minutes. Total time per sword, assuming you purchase filigree, which is a finishing item, is 457 minutes. So it's going to take a long time to make. And you can see where they're going with this. They're aiming to have something that is very profitable at the end, but really bad for XP. So it'll be interesting to see if this makes it into the final game, because, you know, I have a hunch that we could potentially see people start to complain if they actually see these and see, oh, their people are going to be able to make tier 92 weapons and armor without doing PVM. Oh, I better complain. I better start a writing campaign. I better riot World 66. I better start shitposting on the shithole and get this not to happen.
I'm just laughing, but at the same time, I'm realizing how close to the truth it actually is.
Hey, I've been around the street numerous times. I know that's the truth. That is the truth. That's the way it's going to go if this gets out there, if people read these. Because, I mean, these are multiple pages long. People are just going to read the top executive summaries. They're not going to go into seeing the fact that there's going to be tier 92 stuff that can be potentially made, but you will still need a rare PVM drop. So I'm assuming that's going to be the piece of candy that makes it palatable to the PVM community. So, and you know, you're right. There is no overload item unless that hasn't been designed yet. So fingers crossed. But I mainly want everyone to have a look at these, because these docs are all out, and following from our discussion on last week's podcast, I think it makes sense for everyone to have a look at these. In particular, we did get some clarification from Jack on how the strength bonuses work. The strength bonus is a 10% benefit added to your mining skill, which amounts to about 5% of your total performance. So 5% really isn't that much, so it's a nice little boost.
And something I will want to say is that give you feedback early, because as Jagex said, they don't want to design something and then get the feedback that, no, this isn't good enough, you have to rework it. So even if you're saying that, I want more information, I want to wait until they develop more, but it's now during development when it's easy to change, when it's cheap to make to throw something away and then come up with a new, better thing.
Well, I mean, at this point, I think we're at the point where nothing's going to be thrown away because there's multiple pages and pages upon documents here that you would just tweak what we have right now. So.
Yeah, but you, Celion, you of all of us should know that feedback must come early to change something, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we had the dev diaries, and that sort of settled what players want. We have to realize that they have been gathering feedback for an hour. If the community would now start saying, no, we want something completely else, then either the community is contradicting itself, or Darius hasn't listened in the third place, which would be bad. So if we assume good intent from both sides, tweaks is the only thing that we should expect at this point in the process.
That makes
sense.
And
Darius has been doing really well. Like, it is important to gather feedback early, but I think they have been doing that, maybe a bit too long even. I think they should have at some point trusted themselves to do the right thing. But hopefully now we will get to a point where everything is going to be all right.
Alrighty. Well then, you can find full links to all the design documents in the show notes, and that's at update.rsbnb.com. But right now we do have a question from Wolfie. He says, since the poll on keeping the Halloween event as a quest is in game currently, what are your thoughts on bringing back previous holiday events as a separate quest category? That said, I know some of them used to be quests and they were removed from the list, but perhaps we'll get them.
Good question.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be nice to have these kind of events in game, you know, but some of them don't really make sense to have in game as events. Like, for example, Sliske and the Chocolate Factory, that is just 100% Easter. On the other hand, all the Christmas events, say Christmas 2006 with the marionettes and whatnot that we got to go have a look back last year at, that came back to game last year as a different Christmas event, so it wouldn't really make sense to have those in game as replayable. I think there was some, wasn't there some Fremenic Ice Winter Christmas event that got put into game as a quest at some point?
I don't remember. Yeah. I mean, Land of Snow or something like that is one of the ones, yeah. But that's still in the game as a quest, I think.
Yeah, the White Lands, I think it was. Myth of the White Lands.
That's it. That's
Jack.
And you know, you can look at adding these items in game as quests, but at the same point, if they're not designed to be a quest and not designed to be permanent, they would just stick out like a sore thumb in game. So I think if we want this kind of thing, it needs to be done going forward with that kind of holiday quest category.
A lot of the events are very holiday specific. The Christmas events are very Christmassy. You can't really put a permanent piece of content in a game that has Santa in it.
That's right.
Unless you do it, unless it's behind the scenes. But everything goes in behind the scenes, to be honest. But
yeah, that's why I have been pushing with make it seasonal. Like, just put a portal that becomes visible after you clear the current year's event, and you can replay old events and just let it be in the game for 2 weeks. It lets new players experience old events, and it lets old players experience old events again, replayable. And it's only 2 weeks.
I suggested something like this last year.
Enhanced key, anyone? Enchanted key, what is it? Enchanted key?
Oh, there you go.
I mean, a lot of effort already went in getting the updates we got last year with the special Christmas event in. So we have to really think whether it's worth for Jagex to put in this content, because it's all the content, like qualitatively, like look at the graphical quality of some of the things that went in.
Yeah. And I mean, who would you be playing to here? You would be playing to the nostalgists. I mean, I think we'd all like to play these past events, but I think investment and time-wise, it doesn't make sense to do it. And plus, like you said, just look at the difference between how the game looks now compared to when they came in. So,
But it's still a shame if content they put time on gets removed after 2 weeks and then is never seen again.
Well,
I mean, that's the fate of holiday events, and I'm pretty sure the time slot, the time box, in a way that makes sense for those events.
Yeah, and plus, I think if you're designing a holiday event, you'd make it so it's not as intensive to design as a regular quest. So you don't have that constantly hanging over your head that it's only going to be around for so long. Maybe.
Yeah, but I still would at least have a portal where you can play previous, maybe just only the previous year's event. That would, in a way, double the amount you could do. Or just half it if you only want to play this year's.
I don't know. I think the answer is just no. If you have to break it down to a yes or no, but that's just me. No. All right. Anything else on that one?
Nope.
Okie dokie then. If you guys want to send questions in, send them to update.rsbnb.com/ask or questions@rsbnb.com. We also take voicemails at 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. All right, so on to tech news we go. It's no secret that the fall is the time when smartphone manufacturers release their newest hardware. And
Christmas like hype. Off.
Christmas hype, there you go. Razer has debuted its first smartphone, and it is, of course, built for gaming, as is everything Razer. Pre-order started on November 1st at the U.S. price of $699, and it ships on November 17th. And, of course, it is a behemoth when it comes to stats. This has a Snapdragon 835 processor with 8 gigabytes of RAM, a huge 4,000 milliamp hour battery. By comparisons, I think the new iPhone's only coming at around 2,500 or 2,600 milliamp hours. A 5.7-inch LCD display, which is quad HD, with 120 hertz refresh rate. So not only is it going to be a very large and very high-resolution screen, it's going to refresh at 120 FPS, which is something that not a lot of gaming monitors do these days. So what we're seeing here is effectively the first gaming smartphone. It's not too hot on its cameras. It has two 12 megapixels cameras on the back. Initial reports, of course, say that it doesn't compare to the Pixel or the iPhone 8 Plus. Also got a unique proprietary 24-bit digital audio converter, which is included in the box, stereo front-facing speakers with Dolby Atmos capabilities, which of course means that you're going to get a superb sound experience from it, and of course it comes with Android M and Nougat. So $699.
Why would you get a phone and not a tablet?
It's a very good question, because 5.7 inches, that's approaching tablet size. Well, I guess the Pixel XL is 6 inches, right?
I don't even know.
No idea.
No idea either. But like, the point is, like, I can see the shift of gaming on handhelds, like the old Game Boys, the PS.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking on Game Boy when I saw this.
That's shifting to mobile. In a way,
yeah.
The Nintendo Switch is more popular in handheld mode than in docked mode.
Exactly. The Switch is a tablet when you look at it.
It is a tablet. And I mean, the DS or the 3DS is still relatively popular. But I can't really see people using, like, if you had to, unless you are also going to use it as a phone, which I find unlikely, to be honest. People want a good camera, they want, I don't know, they might, but let's say people don't use this as their primary phone, you're going to have to take an extra device for the gaming, and then you might as well take a tablet or a handheld like the Switch, which is maybe a bit more of a hassle to take around, but gets you much more bang for your buck in terms of like screen state. Because to be honest, you don't need a beast like this to play mobile games.
Yeah, mobile games work fine on the standard iPhones, right? Because, and of course the Android devices, because if you are putting in a game into an app store, or any kind of app into an app store, there are requirements that it run at a decent level. So you're not going to get a piss poor experience, pardon the words, that's just what came to my mouth. You're going to get something that's going to run at least 30 FPS, right? If it's in the store.
There are developers that limit their games to higher end devices, especially in the Android ecosystem. There's a lot of devices that cannot even run the simplest games because they're so old and simple, because developing markets. So, I mean, there is a split at some point, but there is no developer in their right mind that's going to say you need 4 gigs of RAM to play my game, because only people with this Razer phone can play that at that point. So what really is the point in this game? You're going to get a really smooth gaming experience, but you get it on most high-end phones. How is it going to really be better at playing games than a normal high-end phone that will be good at everything? It might be a lot cheaper, because it's more specialized, but then again...
But this is still, if you live in the US, $300 more than the Switch.
Yeah, so why would you not get a Switch? I mean, I can't come up with enough reasons why you don't want a Switch, probably, but...
Maybe the games you don't want on it are not available.
Yeah, but just for the sake of an argument, why wouldn't you buy a Samsung tablet thing? I don't know how they're called. Samsung Note tablets? No, they're not.
I don't know.
Another thing. Why did you get one of those? Why did you get like a Surface?
Oh, it's the Note 7 or the Note 10. There we go. That's what they're called. The Note 7.
Why would you get a Note 10? Why wouldn't you get a Surface, which can act as a tablet? Why wouldn't you get... Like, there's so many
tablets. The Surface is the ultimate, because that can run anything that runs on MS Windows.
There you go. So, I mean, I really like the idea of a phone made for games, because that's ultimately probably where we're going with gaming. I mean, even Nintendo is making mobile games these days, and that says something, because they're usually the last to anything. So,
I mean, I get the move, possible.
But I don't get the move towards a phone. You have the NVIDIA Shield, right?
Didn't that thing flop?
It might have done. I had never heard of it, really. But like that one actually sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a NVIDIA Shield tablet. Yeah, it looks like a Switch, basically. It didn't really work out, but like that's something I would find more likely to be successful than a phone, because I think people look for more than just games on a phone. It's not going to replace a device.
So I'm not sure. Sorry, finish. I thought you were finished.
And I'm not sure if it's going to be an additional device, whether a phone would be something people would get, or if they would go for something at larger size, which I would find more likely.
Yeah. So speaking of the Razer phone, Jagex has been invited to test RuneScape Mobile on this Razer phone, and they started off with testing old school, of course, because it was probably further ahead. They put out a triumphant tweet on the old school RuneScape Twitter account. We achieved 95 FPS in Varrock Square and 70 FPS in the Grand Exchange.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
And, of course, that's still below the screen's operating refresh rate of 120, so... there's room to improve with this, but
yeah, of course. But I'm still fascinated by technology like this. That I'm not thinking so much towards the practical use, but rather what's possible. That companies are releasing the products and showing this is possible. That there is no limitations, and keep raising the bar. And that's something. That competitive bar that I find very fascinating in terms of technologies. I mean, people are competing all the times who has the biggest memory, who is the fastest, who has the longest endurance. And And this is a new device that I really find fascinating, because I have a power bank that it's meant to charge my phone, but that doesn't compare to, or I shouldn't say doesn't compare, but that doesn't have as much battery as this one has.
Yeah. And I mean, that's just what you get with the future technology. And I think one of the next major things that you're going to see someone push the limit on is, of course, battery capacity, because that has to be one of the biggest things holding things back in the modern world about mobile computing. But
unless everybody buys a really long extender, which would make a very messy society, or lamp posts that can charge your phone as you pass by them.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. Taking out a can of food and holding it by the lamp post. A microwave on the go. But unless that happens, battery is one of the main issues with any mobile device.
You know, I think two final closing things on this. There's no headphone jack with this, and we don't know what carriers are going to have it in the U.S., so that'll also play into role. And if they can get it below the price of a standard gaming handheld gaming device, then that might be something worth looking at, specifically in terms of contract. But anyways, continuing on the mobile front, Microsoft announced an updated Surface Pro this past week, and it is getting an LTE cellular option, so you'll be able to effectively have the first ever cellular wireless Microsoft-based Windows 10, full Windows 10 laptop-tablet hybrid. It's going to start at $1,149 US, which is, you know, on par with the iPad Pro variants in that same current model market. What we also want to take away from this event here is that this is, of course, an LTE-enabled device, and Microsoft did tease that they were going to be bringing an LTE-enabled device. Unfortunately, there was zero reference at this event of the Windows Phone ecosystem or the Surface Phone. So I think it's safe to say at this point that Surface Phone, Windows Phone is dead.
That's a warning signal right there.
For what?
For it being dead.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah, I mean, they haven't outright killed it, but that's what's happening with this. I think this is ultimately going to be tailored more towards business, because I don't know anyone who is using a Surface Pro for, you know, mobile gaming, so to speak, or if you're a standard home user, you're more likely to get an iPad or just a standard Samsung Note tablet, as we talked about before. So, but Microsoft is betting huge on this, because from what was talked about in the event, they see the future of business being mobile and people working anywhere. So this is a really important product for them to get them ahead in the market where they've made the most money, and that is, of course, the business and enterprise market. So this will probably be a huge success for Microsoft. So,
sounds good.
And I believe, Sirion, there was also something funny that you wanted to talk about that happened at this event.
So one of the big services by Microsoft is Azure. I don't know how to pronounce it. So one of the engineers, Microsoft engineers, was showing off how that worked in a web browser. And this software engineer was using Microsoft Edge, which is the newest browser by Microsoft. And Azure kept crashing in Microsoft Edge. So this engineer was like, give me 1 second. I'm going to install Google Chrome for a second. So during the presentation, they installed Google Chrome and they continued their presentation using Google Chrome, and it just worked. And this is something that was recorded, posted online as a video by Microsoft. So that is, it is just, I mean, we always, it's a bit of a meme that Internet Explorer and now Edge as a follow-up is just, it's just terrible. But it actually seeing this happen, I thought was quite hilarious in a way. I mean, kudos to the software engineer to just go through this that, like, calmly. But, yeah, it's like a funny little thing. I don't really know where Microsoft has to go with Edge, but it's definitely not really working out, I think.
And he unchecks the checkbox that says, help make Chrome better. I'm watching the video right now.
Yeah. No, he does that. And I think he says something about it. Oh, yeah, let's not make Google better through this or something like that, he said. It's just really, really hilarious, like little exchange to see. But yeah, kudos to the software engineers to just go through that calmly. It's just, the irony is, it's just, it made me really chuckle.
Yeah, and it shows that, you know, Microsoft has designed a great browser in Edge, but it still has problems that, you know, people need to work around, especially even Microsoft engineers and home users too. So,
I mean, the fact that Azure, which is a Microsoft product for businesses, doesn't run on Edge because Edge is probably used by a lot of businesses as well, it's kind of worrying. So, like, that is something they have to figure out. But, like, this little thing, the fact that Chrome is the go-to browser is just an interesting thing to see.
Absolutely. So,
very hilarious.
All right, so our final piece of tech news has the really interesting title here. Google to replace UEFI and Intel ME with a small Linux kernel, Nerf. So, okay. So I'm going to let Sirion handle the bulk of this, but just a little bit of explanation before we begin here. UEFI is the firmware, which is effectively a very, very tiny and compressed operating system that starts up when you press the power button of your computer. It initializes your hardware, and then it boots the operating system. So Google is attempting to make an open source version of this. So Sirion, take it away.
Right. So, yeah, to make your computer start doing things, you need a tiny bit of firmware on your device. Not your computer, like your mobile phone, like any electrical device that you boot up has a bit of firmware to deal with the fact that you hit a power button, we have to start running an operating system. So it's like, it's a tiny, tiny bit of code that does that. And historically, it has been the UEFI and the Intel ME, which stands for, I forgot for a second what it stands for.
Yeah,
management engine. There you go. Yeah, management engine. And it's like nobody thinks about this, right? But in fact, this is a tiny little black box that is in your computer.
Very proprietary.
Nobody knows what code is actually in there. What code is actually being run. The only people that are allowed to have insight in this are, of course, the people that work on it and the government.
And now, that should be raising some big flags for people. It raises flags for me.
If you're me, you're like, that doesn't sound quite right.
Yeah.
So I think Windows sort of tried getting around this by using their own
secure boot technology, which is a pain in the butt if you're ever trying to recover a Windows install today.
Yeah. So Windows tried getting around it, but like most devices, and even like the older devices that don't have a really modern version of Windows, will be running UEFI and Intel ME. And a lot of people don't know this, but that means that the vast majority of all smart devices run a tiny bit of code, and nobody knows what that bit of code is. That sounds scary, and so thought a bunch of key people at Google. So they're like, let's make our own thing. And that's called NERF, which stands for non-extensible Reduced firmware. There you go. Non-extensible reduced firmware. And basically what it is, it's a really stripped down version of Linux that can act as a little bit of firmware, and it basically takes over the role. And the nice thing about this is that it will be open source.
Yeah.
Which means everybody can look at the code. Everybody can see it doesn't do anything suspicious. So there will be a lot more fuss.
Yeah.
Trust.
And it says the problem is Linux no longer controls the x86 platform, which basically means that if you install Linux on hardware that you just, you know, freely purchase from your local computer store, you are still at the mercy of this UEFI proprietary firmware that you don't know what's happening. And the Linux community doesn't like that.
No, there is no way around it, really. That's the point. Like, unless you're a Windows user, you're stuck with running a bit of code on Intel. And this is a big problem. I mean, like, consider companies that have real huge proprietary information. Having a bit of black box code is probably freaking a bunch of security engineers out. And maybe you are freaked out now that somebody is running code on your computer that nobody really knows what it does, and you're right to do so. So this is a huge, huge sort of advance in trying to fix that.
And there's also security problems too, because no one knows what the UEFI code looks like. So someone could come along one day after poking in and doing poking with it and say, here's a piece of software you install on your PC. It corrupts the UEFI firmware. Your system doesn't boot unless you pay us $2 million ransomware.
Exactly. Like, these sound far-fetched, but they are very possible. And with the advances in cybercrime, these are things we have to start thinking about. Nerf is better at that respect. It's open, and it still has to be put on your device. So if you buy a device and they say it has Nerf on it, you still have to trust something somewhere at some point. But this is going to close a lot of doors. And I think that's a good thing, because everybody can see what people are doing. And this is like a small sidestep, but I feel this is kind of the way the world is going right now.
You see it more and more.
Like, open source, Linux was always the big open source thing, but a lot of people were skeptical, and that's not going to work. Yeah.
And just a bit of a clarity here. If you haven't heard of Linux, Linux is basically an operating system that's existed since the 90s. Technical people have only normally used it because it was so obtuse, and it's made strides that way in the last decade to make it more user-friendly. But it's still nowhere as simple as Windows or Mac OS. Hence why you've probably not heard of it.
No, but it's a big thing. It's good to have like this open platform, because everybody knows what you're doing. And I feel that companies like Google is doing really well on this open source aspect. Like, Android, the base is open source. You can just download the source, build a copy, put it on your phone, and you have a working phone, all open source. Same with Chromium. It's a browser that's completely open source. You can compile it and you can use it. That is a good thing. And in this case, Google has layers around it. Like, they have their own Pixel stock Android. They have
colorful Chrome, of course. Yeah.
So like they built things around it, but they're contributing to a basis that everybody can use. And I think that's a really good model. And you see Microsoft going in that direction as well. The C# compiler Roslyn is open source. They're working at making a lot of things more open. Even though Microsoft in the past was fairly closed, I think.
Yeah.
I think I'm starting to like Microsoft more and more for that particular reason.
The newest Apple, development tools from Microsoft are completely free to use.
Yeah. Apple is not really going there yet. Like, they have lots of like closed things like iOS, macOS. They are hammered down quite
right.
a lot.
And, like, but those operating systems do also have lots of open source components that Apple contributes to.
Correct. So, like, Apple is maybe not quite on a level yet, but like the movement is towards this open source thing. And we also have to consider, like, next to it, the current generation of people growing up, they're way more educated about anything tech than before. They will grow up in a world where cybercrime is almost in the news daily. They will have a lot more understanding about the security problems and that kind of stuff. So going in this direction is a good thing. And this is a really important step in making your entire computer experience really transparent. And while for a lot of people, this will be sort of a transparent change, it is a huge step towards creating a better and open internet stuff thing. Is that enough?
And that's what we need, especially today, with lots of predatory companies and corporations who are looking to lock things down. And I'm looking primarily right now at the bandwidth providers and Facebook. So,
yeah, and I think like companies like Microsoft and especially Google get a lot of shit for being so big and being so powerful, but their contributions to open source code are massive, absolutely massive. And we should not underestimate the impact that's having into bringing the entire world to a better place.
Oh, no, we shouldn't.
I 100% agree with that. And I think if anyone out there is a little bit wary of what Google does sometimes, you just need to look at the underpinnings, like you said, Chrome, Android, and now Nerf here. So it's definitely a very interesting time, and I think we do need to head in this direction, because if we head towards the closed, open ecosystems that we previously had, we're going to put ourselves at the mercy of large companies that might not have our best interests out there. And I think the one that everyone is always constantly understating and misunderstanding is Facebook, because Facebook, I don't know if they're doing anything like this, but from the moment you go on Facebook, you are their product, and that's what they're selling. Whereas Google, Microsoft, they're all making strides here to be more open and ensure that our hardware is going to be open and everyone's going to be able to see what's going on if they want to with this, which is really, really good.
I mean, they're not charities. I don't want to lie. They're not charities. They want to make a profit, but I think they do so in a responsible way.
No one should expect them to be charities.
But they do so in a responsible way. It's the same as power companies, right? Power companies want to make a profit as well, but they do so in a responsible way by using green energy. That's a similar thing. You can do things the right way and you can do it the wrong way. And doing it the right way is the more important thing than making more profit, I think.
We actually have companies competing for green energy here in Sweden.
Oh, yeah, of course.
All right. I would like to one day get a computer with a small Linux kernel named Nerf on it. I don't know when that's going to be feasible to do, since this still looks like it's very theoretical in development, but it would be a great thing to do to replace UEFI. So we're going to wrap up the show now. We're going to talk about Skill of the Month. The November Skill of the Month is thieving. Currently, Flash is in first place with 466,000 XP gained. Second is Jakia 8 with 47.8K. And in third place, we have the RR Ron Man, an Iron Man account of the RR Man, with 39K XP gain.
So that's the R Iron Man. Ah, that's a good one.
That is very good, isn't it?
Oh, life in crime. How can I live in life in crime? Why do you encourage them, Shane?
That's just part of what I do. Sometimes there's necessary evils, Tycho. But our October Skill of the Month ended. The Attack Skill of the Month ended with 9.2 million attack XP gained, with Bernasius gaining that. Second place was Jamandy with 7.2, and third place was Flash with 1.2 million XP gained. And that leads us nicely into the Informer Roundup this month, which was written by King Kola. Has a good overview of all the articles we had this month, including an article on the RuneScape free-to-play expansion, my talk on the reality of microtransactions, which was a hot topic issue, of course, on last week's podcast, Tanis talking about Dimension of the Damned when it first came out and why it succeeded then, though he might want to revise that in a future article given what we had today, And I would like to point everyone to Colton's most recent article as well, which is called A Primer on Piracy, the RuneScape kind, of course, because the Pirate Quest finale is coming soon. So if you've forgotten what all the Pirate Quests were about, give a read to this, refresh your memory, and you'll be fresh in time for Pieces of Hate.
Oh, yes, Pieces of Hate. There are so lots of ninja updates that could have been made quest reward for that quest.
Yep. Alrighty. We also have a couple achievements this week before we get to the pick of the week. PTV Spooky got 99 Slayer on the 1st of November. Kotahi Atwa got 99 Construction on the 29th. And boy, that's a name to say right there. Moving on to the 27th, we have Cyan Panera with 99 Defense, Cyan R with 99 Crafting, and Jade Gizmo with 99 Mining. And finally, we end up with Ghost Caping with 99 Divination. I almost called it Dungeonation there.
Yeah, Ghost Caping being also Quest Caping.
I don't know.
Votes Family Reunion.
I don't know why I always confuse Dungeoneering and Divination.
Why indeed? They are quite different, Shane.
I know. It's happened ever since Divination came out. I almost said Dungeoneering, but...
Maybe that'll stuck in the past.
All right. What do you got for Pick of the Week, Sirion?
All right. So, since the... Well, a couple of years ago, I sort of set myself the target to learn a new language because I'm bilingual. As you might guess, I know some other European languages, and I decided I wanted to do something completely different. And being sort of interested in the Japanese culture and such, anime, I mean, what can I say?
I had no idea you watched those kind of cartoons.
Hmm?
I had no idea you watched anime.
Every now and then. Okay. I enjoy them. Anyway, I decided to try and learn Japanese because I'm kind of also sort of an amateur hobbyist linguist because I find that really interesting. So learning a completely different language or something I wanted to do. Tried many different things. I tried these audio courses. I tried learning myself the new characters. But every single time I would do it a couple of days, I would get stuck. So a couple of months ago, I decided to go and do something I'm not very fond of doing, but this time I downloaded an app. And I decided to sink the money in a yearly subscription for Memrise, which is a learning program for new languages. They have a lot of languages. They have most Western languages, Japanese, well, what else? I can look at the list probably. French, German, Arabic, Turkish, Dutch, Swedish. Like, they have most languages. They usually have, like, a standard one, and you can learn a lot. And it's set up to teach you, like, little phrases and little things incrementally. So if you do it every day, like 5 minutes, you'll learn new things. And it has actually been my most successful attempt so far at learning a language. I'm starting to get a feel for the language. It's not perfect. I try to sort of supplement it by reading books about the actual grammar structures because it will only teach you sentences. Like, it will give you a sentence, you give the answer. But I feel it's a really good way of getting started with something new. And like, even doing it a couple of weeks will give you some basic phrases that if you go on a vacation to, say, France, you can maybe have a couple of French phrases that you can use during your vacation. So I thought it was really helpful. You can use it for free, but you'll be limited in, I think, in the courses, but also the kind of exercise you can do. The subscription, pro subscription, I think, is a couple of bucks per month.
$4.99 US a month.
Yes. And you can also do yearly subscription that will give you a discount. I did a yearly subscription right from the start just to motivate me to actually use it and do it every day. My phone is a bit bust right now, so I'm not getting around to it. But I try doing it every day. It takes 5 minutes. I do it on a train or before going to bed, and it works really well. So I definitely recommend looking into it if you're interested in learning a new language, or maybe just getting a feel for a new language, because that's also what it can do. You can sort of get a feel for how a language is together, which I find personally really interesting. But then again, I might be a bit weird.
Does it work for advanced as well as beginner?
I don't have advanced experience, but like if I look at the courses, so I can look at, for example, Japanese courses. It has Japanese 1, Japanese 2, Japanese 3. It has language specific for the different kinds of text. It has a special course for levels, like the official proficiency levels. So like there's such a wide variety of courses. I think it can be done, but like if you really want to get to that proficiency level, I think at some point you have to start learning the grammar, and it doesn't teach you the grammar. Right. It teaches you phrases.
Okay.
So it will give you the basics. It will give you basic vocabulary, basic words, and you can start recognizing patterns. So sort of self-teach you the grammar to a certain extent. But at some point, you'll have to supplement it with actual teaching material.
Yeah, because I have about 5 or 6 years of French, but that was 15 or 20 years ago. So
mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting to see if that could revive that and pick it up. But
and
good.
if you're really into it, there's even a course on Japanese naughty words, apparently.
Oh wow!
Take you 21 minutes to complete.
Of course, that would be on the internet now, wouldn't it?
No. Right.
Well, that's at memrise.com. So
and there's an app for Android and iOS as well, and it syncs between everything because it's linked to your account.
Nice. All right, so what have we been doing? Let's start with you, Sirion.
Not much. I came back from vacation last weekend, so I've sort of been catching up.
You came back to a huge firestorm of MTX and whatnot.
Yeah. I'm sort of glad I missed that. I actually sort of actively, I have actually actively tried to just keep out of it for once. My week vacation, I'm not one to turn off easily, but this time my phone is bust, so I didn't have much of a choice, but I had taught myself I would like let a lot of things just go, enjoy my vacation. So yeah, I got back. There was this whole MTX storm, which I ignored. I just, I've been doing a couple of days. I haven't been doing a lot, to be honest. I haven't had a lot of time. I've done the Halloween event, and I'm still sort of figuring out a long-term goal for in-game. I don't really want to put the money in for like an Ironman account to get the quest cape on that. I don't play enough for that.
Yeah.
I don't really want to go for comp cape right now.
No, don't do that. That'll ruin you.
So, yeah, my goals are still to get 115 engineering, and then maybe get their 120 skills at some point. But usually I just pick up something from the completionist achievement list that I feel like doing and just do that. But usually I just log in, do ports, that kind of stuff. I don't play much these days.
How about the Master Quest Cape requirements?
Oh, please, no. All
but
that
they are
PVM.
Different.
Yeah, but all the PVM. I can't.
Yep, I agree.
Just can't be bothered.
I mean, agree.
The main reason I'm not getting Comp Cape is because I need the desert tasks. Not even a joke. That is one of my main reasons for doing it.
Let's move on from that. I don't want to think about that.
What about the chimp boys?
Well, that was repetitive, but...
Not good.
Okay.
Not good. Not good at all. All right. Thank you, Sirion. Thank you. As for me this week, continuing arc fishing for Invention, Halloween event, and did a few herb runs along the way. And the final count on that Reality of Microtransaction post, 191 points and 7,800 views.
You must be proud of yourself.
That's a good number. I still haven't read it because I tried steering clear of it, but I might give it a read just to.
Oh, you don't need to read it. I'm sure you're fine.
Okay.
Well, you might enjoy some of the numbers with it, but anyways.
I mean, I'm a data nerd.
Yeah. So I posted the document that I used to generate that with as well. So if you want to read that, you might find some interest in that too. So, all right. So Taiko, what have you been up to this week?
So Monday started with the updates. Halloween event went straight to Draenor and started questing. And it was then I felt this self-service and solved the puzzle with flying colors. The one who I had to think the most was the wool of the sheep. Because as Sirion mentioned, they never told you can only get rid of three sheep, but not four. So I had to stay and think for a bit before I found a solution. But and I really enjoyed the stories, and that was also a part of the why I call it the self-service, that you have to read the lore that was submitted by the players. It doesn't really give you more, how do you say it? It's there, but it's not more encouraging than when he gives you a quick, not survey, a quick test to get the 10th and final story about how well you read the stories. And then, of course, I congratulated Questcaping on getting her story into the game, and I saw Surreal in the Lore French chat, so congratulations to him too. And then, personally, I learned something new that I never knew, that you get a huge firework for every 10 million
XP. 10 million XP.
I'm never getting used to it, because suddenly I get huge fireworks and epic music. Congratulations, you have gotten 130 million defense XP. And then the same thing happened to 60 million constitution XP. Oh, I still remember when it was called hit points. But anyways, I decided, you know what? I want to do some PVM, something really challenging. So I went to Araxi for the first time in like 6 months, and I got a spider leg middle on my 7th kill.
Wow.
So that shows that I apparently still have RNG with me. And then, of course, I did my dailies and monthlies, now that it's a new month by the time we record this. And I was preparing myself for Dimension of the Damned, but
we all know what happened with that.
Yeah, we already talked about that. So at this point, I just wrote it up at my calendar, and I'm really hoping I won't forget it.
All right. Yeah, I hope we won't forget it either. It's something.
Yeah,
that,
but it's sad.
We need to come back to it, and I hope it goes well, and I hope that they will find a way to salvage these live events in the future. And I think that's what we want the outcome of this episode of the podcast to be, is that this kind of puts a real damper on Dimension of the Damned, but we hope that they'll be able to salvage it in the future some way.
It will be a live stream, so everybody can at least watch.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Anything else before we wrap this episode up then?
No, not at all.
All right.
I mean, one of my personal goals when signing up for the podcast was to, well, improve my English and stop having you breaking my heart all over again.
Did we accomplish that?
Well, I felt I accomplished that. I feel I can argument more freely, and I can stop you from saying things that will crush my heart and soul, and give my own feedback, give my own thing, especially since I have a very high Slayer level and 120 invention. Something
I don't have, yeah.
Yeah, something. So I just want to say it's been an honor working here at RSVP Podcast this month, and really happy to make a difference for everybody who's watching, getting things from my perspective. And what more should I say? Oh, yeah. Have I received any fan mail?
You have. You know, I haven't received. I always receive comments that are episodes are great, but
no fan mail.
I have not received any comments on co-host selection in a couple of months, but I think you guys all do great. That's why I pick you guys, because if you guys didn't do great, I wouldn't have you on the show.
I need to start bribing more people to send me some fan mail through you, Shane.
All right. Well, Tycho, it was great having you on the show. Thank you for doing this and putting up with the rigors of RSVNB update for the month of October. So we'll have you back at some point in the future. It was great having you. And until then, we'll see you next week, guys, for another episode of RSVNB update.
Until next time.
Bye-bye.